Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. A better business starts with planning for profit. Download our free course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, at entrearchitect.com/free course. It's free. Entree Architect Podcast, episode 148. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. We are learning here at Entree Architect that we need to build a better business so we can be better architects. And we want to make the world a better place, right? That's why we became architects in the first place. We all want to make the world a better place. We want to provide a positive social impact. Well, what if our better businesses also built a better world? What if a part of what we do, or all of what we do, benefits the public in some very impactful way? Well, stay tuned, because we're going to share with you a new online resource to learn more about this idea. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, Public Interest Design Firms, with Maya Sharfi and Gilad Marone of proactivepractices.org. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is sponsored by True Style, the leader in high-end residential interior doors. Learn more at truestyle.com. And Tanglewood Conservatories, combining the romanticism of 19th century glass architecture with state-of-the-art technology of today. Learn more at tanglewoodconservatories.com. Maya Sharfi and Gilad Marone, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
It's great,
great to be here.
Great having you here. You are the founders, or the co-founders, of proactivepractices.org, which we'll get into in a little while. It's a project that was just launched. It's a collection of case studies on public interest design firms. So this is going to be a very interesting conversation. These are firms that are focused on positive social impact. Some of them, well, we'll get into that. But before we get into that, let's talk about you guys. Let's learn a little bit about you. Maya, let's start with you and get your origin story, where you've come from, who you are, and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I am a landscape architect by training. I have my master's in landscape architecture, But I joke to people that I'm really secretly a social worker, just wrapped up in designer clothing and designer skill sets. My mom is a social worker, and I've been interested in social issues and people who get left out and how to bring them back in pretty much most of my life. And so I had a chance to work for Public Architecture, which is a nonprofit based in San Francisco that does public interest design. So it takes on design challenges that the private market doesn't have an incentive to take on. And then I also, they run something called the Plus One program, which is a pro bono program for firms. So I worked there, I got my landscape degree, and knew that I ultimately wanted to be doing socially impactful work. And so today I actually run two businesses. The first is Creative Agency, and it's a research and design consulting practice. I work with an affordable housing organization, I work with arts organizations, and I focus on projects that use creative tools to make change. And then I also run Build Yourself Workshop, which is a empowerment boot camp for women in creative fields. And I currently teach it online and also at the Boston Society of Architects. And it takes women through a kind of quick curriculum of negotiation skills, advocating for yourself, being proactive about your career development. And so my work is really allied with proactive practices, our research. And actually, one thing I should mention is that he's not here with us today, but we do have a third collaborator, Nick McClintock. He is an architect by training, and actually dual degree. He's got both an architecture and landscape background.
Okay, sounds good. And people can learn more about Nick, right, you said?
Yeah, Nick, on our website.
At the website, I saw him there. Gilad, yep. How about you? What's your story?
Well, I also have a background in design, was in a program called Design and Environmental Analysis, which was an interesting mix of social science research and architecture and design. And through that, got really involved in participatory planning and the ideas of design as a method to collaboratively shape the environments that we live in. Through that, really got involved in this emerging field of public interest design, or community design, as some people call it. And I'm currently on the board of the Association for Community Design, which is a national nonprofit, and do a variety of research, writing, and design work with nonprofits and with foundations who do different types of community development work. I've written a lot about affordable housing and other urban planning issues. And then I live in New Orleans currently, where I started a small co-working space and design collective called The Blue House, and where I kind of hub for different individuals, both in design and other fields, to come and have dialogue about civic issues. And we've been building towards a more sort of studio-like environment where we'll actually be doing projects around New Orleans. But that's a little bit in the future. And so my interests really lie at this intersection of design, research, social justice, and visual communication.
So two very, very busy people, it sounds like. Let's start with proactive practices. It's a new website. Sounds like it's taken a long time to get here. Before we get into how you got here, talk about what it is so people understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, so Proactive Practices is a web publication that will collect 10 of the first of our case studies on socially impactful design firms. And they're pretty diverse firms. So we have Mass Design Group, IDEO.org, but then we also have smaller firms like Latent Design, which is a small firm out of Chicago. We have Andrea Cochran Landscape Architecture, which is a largely high-end for-profit firm, but they do some significant subsidized work, especially around affordable housing. So we're really looking at the different ways that designers, and mostly built environment designers, design for social impact and find ways to do that within their business models. And so part of what makes Proactive Practices different is we're not just telling the stories and, you know, hey, this is a beautiful project, like, let's look at 10 images of it. What we're really trying to do is to get behind the projects and to look at the organizations that make these projects possible and to ask questions about how you can build a business that you can over time create impact, social impact, over and over and over again.
With so much going on your plates, what inspired you to do this? This is 3 years in the making, right? So, go back 3 years from today, and what inspired you to say, okay? And it probably didn't start 3 years ago where it ended today, or it started today. So tell us about that 3 years ago, that brainstorm of how this started.
Yeah, definitely. The connection between Nick, Maya, and myself is a nonprofit based in San Francisco called Public Architecture. We had all previously worked or interned. And through that organization, we became really connected with a lot of people in this growing field of public interest design. And as Maya mentioned, we saw a lot of projects, but we didn't really see a lot of rigorous examination of the practices behind those projects. And that was really the kind of spark that led to this project. We wanted to understand how entire firms were being built to sustain practices that really focused on this kind of work rather than just doing a single one-off project. And so as we dove into that a little bit further, we started realizing the complexity of research we would need to engage with to understand that. We would need to look at their business models, but also their finances, their staffing structures, in some cases the origin stories of how they got to where they are. And so over the course of the past few years, we worked with an advisory board, and we worked with a lot of professionals in the field who just gave us insights about what would be needed, what would be useful. And over time, we developed some interview protocol. We developed a lot of supplemental research methods so we could really understand the full scope of how these firms practice in the way that they do. But in terms of our personal motivations for it, I think it began with this idea of wanting to work at or run a firm like some of the ones that we've studied, and not really understanding how that happens. And both from the perspective of a up-and-coming professional who wants to start a firm, as well as people more in the mid-career or even firm directors who want to start to shift their practices to be more focused on social impact or public interest work. So that was really the spark, trying to understand how we could build practices around this type of work.
One thing I'll add in is that we didn't really know how to do it when we started. I remember, especially in the early days, coming upon the business model canvas and, grabbing all these papers on what is a business model and, trying to understand firms and multiplier effects and a lot of stuff that, honestly, at the time, we had a limited amount of experience in practice. And so thinking, like, what is all this stuff and what of it is relevant for us to figure out how to do this kind of work? And so over the course of those years and tapping into our resources and our communities and really doing a lot of self-education, we gave ourselves the business and business model education that we needed to study these practices, and we learned it by doing it. So it's been a very long road, but it's also been an amazing road because I think we all see things very differently having these case studies and all the research that went behind them under our belt. And I think the three of us each have a different strength or set of strengths that we bring to the project. And so sometimes we push back on each other's reads, and then we oftentimes come to a better synthesis about what's actually going on in this case and what can we take from it. And so I feel really lucky that I know this is something that I cared about and wanted to kind of break down, figure out, get inside the black box on. And I'm glad that we had this confluence of factors that made it so that we were doing it together.
And these are not just nonprofit organizations, right? Some of these are profitable companies that are just doing social impact work that either completely that's their focus or a portion of what they're doing is social impact. Is that true?
Yeah,
it is. I think that's actually something really important to us as we were selecting firms and trying to decide who we should profile. We really wanted to get a broad range of the types of ways that public interest design is practiced. So there are some for-profit firms, some nonprofit firms, some hybrid firms. We also tried to get a range of disciplines practice. So there's some landscape architecture, some in product design, some in urban planning. And then we also tried to get a range of scales in terms of size and scope of work that these firms do, some are planning in city scale, while others are really working at a very micro scale of just small interventions on a street level.
So they're both profitable firms and non-profitable or non-profit firms. When you look at these case studies, I was looking at some of the case studies, and they're written case studies, right? And there's some great photography, and they're very well designed. So they're actually pretty to look at, as well as some really valuable information. So if there's a firm, maybe emerging professionals that are wanting to start their firm, and they want to do this, I think that this next generation of architects, this is going to be the norm. You know, I see that happening now. That why not? You know, if you're going to build a profitable company, why not have social impact as part of that mission? And I think in my generation, I'm 46, so there's actually probably a generation between me and the emerging professionals that are coming out now. There was always this piece that, you know, okay, we can probably give back somehow, you know, build a profitable firm and then we can give back. But I see that shift in the current generation of architects that are coming up, where they want the actual company to be part of this social impact, and the new generation coming out, they're just being brought up that way, that it's just the normal thing to do. Are you seeing that in the case studies that you've developed?
I think what's great about our case studies is that we really have a whole set of approaches. We have, one of my favorite case studies is of a firm called Latent Design in Chicago.
And it was Catherine Darnstadt, right?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so Catherine Darnstadt didn't intend to have a socially impactful firm when she started. She was pregnant around the recession and got laid off and just needed a backup plan. And so that's how Latent Design started. But through her experience working with Architecture for Humanity and working on socially impactful projects and working on projects with really gender and racially diverse project teams, she realized that this was the kind of work she wanted to do. She was also getting her foot in the door through doing pro bono work with local nonprofits. And so, you know, I think her model is one of the most interesting models that we've profiled, but it started out not, you know, a classic social impact design firm. Then of course we have firms like Mass Design Group, which is just, you could argue, like the paragon of social impact architecture right now. And then on the other hand, one of the other firms that's really interesting that we've looked at is Inscape Publica, which is a for-profit firm that created a nonprofit twin company. And the nonprofit twin company works on very specific things for very specific clients, works on nonprofit projects all the way up to detailed schematic design. So isn't doing construction administration where, you know, it's pretty expensive, costs can soar. And so it's a really, really smart hacking of the kind of typical design firm offering to fit the needs of nonprofit clients, because nonprofit clients usually can least afford design when they most need it. You know, they need it at the front end of a project when they're trying to figure out what is possible. We know we have these issues. We know space is related to it, but we don't really have the expertise to make the kind of decisions about our space that we need to make. And then we also need to be able to sell that idea to someone else. So we need, you know, a sense of how much it's going to cost, and we need nice renderings. So I think what's been great for us is to see the different ways different firm leaders move into this kind of work. And sometimes it's clear out the gate. Sometimes it's a personal commitment that finds an expression later. And I think that there's a lot of ways people can go. And so we specifically tried to profile a huge diversity of those, because we wanted our readers to be able to say, like, hey, that's like me. I can do that. Like, I can do that tomorrow. Let's get started now.
And I think, Mark, your point about generations is very spot on. I remember reading an article a few years ago in Residential Architect by this woman named Cheryl Weber, and I still remember this quote she started the article with. She said, "A dedication to social justice propels today's young design professionals." And I think that's really true in a more deeper way than we've seen in the past. You know, Young people have always been attracted to humanitarian causes, but I think there is a fundamental shift in the way young design professionals and mid-career design professionals are thinking about this now, less as a idealistic goal and more as a third leg of sustainability, that there's economic sustainability, environmental sustainability, and social sustainability, which is really important. And in terms of how that relates to a firm, you know, we've heard from a lot of different directors that this is no longer just something they'd like to do. It's a smart business decision because they need to attract young, talented professionals who desire careers that have some sort of social value. And there's a host of other kind of business values we've documented through these case studies that are really pointing to the fact that while people want to do this for all kinds of moral reasons, business leaders are also really seeing this as a smart business decision to orient their practices more towards this type of work.
Yeah, you see Kenneth Cole Shoes and Warby Parker and then also Tom Shoes, you know, these big companies that are focused on being profitable but also giving back and becoming multi-million dollar companies. So certainly architects who are already with that mindset, we all became architects to make this world a better place, every one of us. And so to look at a business model that actively gives back while we become profitable just makes sense. Hey, let's take a quick break here to say thank you to two of our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, True Style Doors and Tanglewood Conservatories. Because as platform sponsors, these companies provide funding and support for our overall mission here to become an influential force in this profession of architecture for small firms, for you and me. They recognize the need for us small firms to build better businesses in order to be better architects. And both of these companies, they are run by great people. I've met them. They're passionate about their products and they want to share their knowledge with you. So go check them out and let them know that Entree Architect sent you. First off is True Style. Have you specified True Style Doors yet? Have you gone to their site at truestyle.com? You need to see these doors. If you are tired of getting callbacks from your clients saying that the doors have warped or that the joints have split and the paint is showing the bare wood, True Style Doors, that doesn't happen. Over 400 made-to-order styles, True Style offers premium MDF doors for painted application, and they have 20 standard species of wood for pretty much any style that you want. If you can dream up a style, they'll make it for you. True Style, driven by design. Check them out at truestyle.com and start designing your doors today. True Style, driven by design. Visit True Style, that's True Style, TRUSTILE.com, and start designing your doors today. And Tanglewood Conservatories. Tanglewood Conservatories. You have to check out these amazing structures. Tanglewood Conservatories, custom designs and builds authentic residential and commercial conservatories. Those are glass structures inspired by the romanticism of the 19th century glass structures that we see in history books, but built with state-of-the-art technology and master craftsmanship. These are amazing. If you're interested in designing a pool enclosure, a gazebo, a greenhouse, or a light-filled space, a client is looking for the most unique light-filled space, check out Tanglewood Conservatories, and they will help you create that masterpiece. You can design it, and you can work with their designers. They'll build it for you. Amazing structures. Tanglewood Conservatories. Anything else is just another room. For more information, visit tanglewoodconservatories.com. tanglewoodconservatories.com. And let them know that Entree Architect sent you. Will, and I know it's relatively fresh, a relatively fresh site, so the case studies are there and developing. Will there be a model with that an emerging professional could come to proactive practices and just plug in your model to start a firm?
I love that idea. And actually, as we've been generating this project, one of the ways we've been thinking about it is that there's all these strategies. There's strategies for how your staff is going to work and what skill sets you have and who you're going to work with and what you're going to offer them and how your offering might be different than a traditional architecture firm. And we always imagined it as a kind of grafting process where you take the pieces that work for you. For this first launch, we knew we just had to get the cases and the information out there. But part of what we tried to do with the design of it is to really encourage, you know, and it's nice to hear your compliments on it, is to say, okay, well, what are you going to do with this? And here's what we think you can take away from it. And I think, you know, a wonderful, amazing next step would be to actually synthesize that into a process people can use.
Yeah, and I think that would allow it to grow. Because I see often organizations that are developed that want to get the message out, to want to inspire people, to want to communicate information, and then it dies because there's no monetary backbone to it. There's nothing there to sustain it. And so when people have come to me who want to start firms but want to have this social impact as part of it, I encourage them to build a business. And then have that business fund their social impact. Because I've had people say, I just want to start a nonprofit. I want to build an architecture firm that's purely nonprofit. And I encourage them to build a profitable architecture firm and then use that profit to fund the cause. I don't know if you agree with that or whether that's just one way of doing it. But I think a model that someone can actually use would help you potentially generate revenue for the organization so that you can continue the mission.
One thing I'll say about your point, which I think is I would say pretty so one, yeah, I'll, to respond to your point, sometimes people forget that whether you're a for-profit or a nonprofit, it's really just a legal designation and right. You still have to have more revenue than you have expenses, otherwise you're out of business. Like a nonprofit isn't a magical solution to somehow have money. It's just a way to get grant money. And it comes with a whole set of other constraints and other limitations. And so from the very beginning, we tried to be model agnostic. You know, is it a for-profit? Is it a nonprofit? Is it a B Corp? Like, okay, that's great. But let's look at what goes in, what comes out, because it's either sustainable or it's not. And sometimes, of course, your run up to sustainability can take some time. And I know, you know, you, Mark, have worked with so many people as they're starting their business, and you know that it takes a while for the seeds that you plant to pay off. But that said, your model has to fly, and nonprofits can flop just as much as for-profits can flop, and vice versa.
Yeah. And I would hazard to guess that nonprofits tend to flop more than profitable firms, only because sometimes their whole support system is grants and donations. And so, and I think a lot of people who start nonprofits don't expect how much work and effort it takes to go out there and get people to donate or to apply for grants and get these grants in order to do the work that they want to do. It's probably equally as difficult or maybe more difficult than building a business that then provides the income to have the social impact that you want to have.
Yeah, and I think it depends a lot on the context and where it's starting from. So, for example, one of our case studies, Inscape Publico, the one Maya mentioned previously that has this sort of dual or twin model, one of the things that the founder, Greg, said was that it was very important that they had their for-profit side of their firm established before they started the nonprofit, because it gave them credibility, gave them experience, it gave them networks with potential clients. So we don't have to think of it as so kind of in black and white. You don't have to only do one or the other. You could start with one and then transition into another. And we've seen other firms do similar things where they have a for-profit and then start a nonprofit arm or start a studio within their firm that focuses on this type of work. So I think there's a lot of different options. But there is, I think, still value in thinking about starting just a purely nonprofit firm. And that's not to say it's necessarily better or worse, mm-hmm. but that it presents a different type of value. And I think we see that in the case study of Mass Design Group. They've really charted a unique path because they were rooted as a nonprofit from the very beginning. And that led them to use certain values to really guide what they were doing from day one.
And, you know, the other thing I'll say about that is that and I think this can cut across all models, is that at the end of the day, you have to be providing value that somebody or some institution is willing to pay for. So whether that's value that, say, the public health world cares about providing, and you make the case and then you're able to show a return on their investment, or if you're working for private clients, you're providing value. And I think one of the places that architects can sometimes get stuck is we describe value in terms that we understand, our profession understands, but we have a harder time translating that value to the language that other people, our target audience, our target customer uses. And so I think the way to do it is to identify the kind of value that you want to offer, figure out what you would need in order to be able to provide that value, and then a firm structure, like a legal structure, right? For-profit, nonprofit, B Corp, is a mechanism to do it, and you pick the one that works best for what you want to do.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, because it's such a crucial point. I think that deciding the type of work you want to do and the reasons for it can really be a valuable starting point. You know, do you want to address environmental degradation? And what kind of work would do that? Do you want to address affordable housing? And then what kind of work would do that? There's a lot of different ways to focus a practice, but I think having that underlying kind of passion or desire to change something is a really good place to build off of.
You just have to follow the money attached to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Right. And that's important, because if it can't be funded, it can't thrive. It can't sustain itself.
Unless you have a trust fund, but you know,
right,
that's,
exactly.
That's not what we're doing here. So,
right. And you know, that goes for any business. You know, my listeners have been hearing me talk about vision and mission and goals and strategies for years. And it's no different. It doesn't matter whether you're starting a hot dog stand or you want to have a globally socially impactful architecture firm. It starts with a vision. You have to have that big idea and really have that clear idea of what you want to do and how you want to do it. And then your mission is why. Why do you have this big vision? Why do you want to do this? And then work your way back to goals and strategies and create a business plan for your social mission. And then start working on it. Get to work. What's next? What's next for proactive practices after you finish out the case studies? Will there be more case studies, or is there a next phase that you're thinking about potentially proceeding with?
Yeah, that's a question we're actually still asking ourselves a little bit. We want to continue producing case studies, because through this research, we found so many more firms that we didn't even know about previously who have very interesting models that are unlike some of the ones we've ever seen before. We've also thought about turning this into kind of educational tools, teaching tools. Could we help provide curriculum for students? Something that we've thought was very important is that if people are learning this as part of their design training, what does that do to the next generation of professionals who are coming into practice? We've also thought a little bit about potentially starting a small consulting practice where we could work directly with firm leaders, regardless of the scale of firm, to help them think through how could some of these strategies we've been identifying apply to their work and their firms, and how could that allow them to start to shift what they're doing a little bit. So there's a lot of different directions we could go in, but we've really been focused on finishing this first set of 10 case studies right now.
Yeah, it's proactivepractices.org. Is the site. It's a great resource for anybody who's interested in social impact architecture firms or design firms. What about social media? Are you on Twitter and Facebook as Proactive Practices or other?
It's through our own handles. So, okay. We each have handles. But we're hashtagging Proactive Practices, all one word. So that if you like what we wrote, and it's helping you make a change in your business or your career, like, let us know. We want to know.
So hashtag proactive practices. Where can someone find you on social media, each of you?
So I'm at Maya Sharfie, and that's MiaSCharphie, all one word.
Gilad.
And similarly, it's just my name, GiladMeron.
And we'll have links to both of those and proactivepractices.org on the show notes entrearchitect.com/episode148. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for taking on this mission and providing this valuable resource. This doesn't exist right now. I've looked for it. I've looked to provide more information like this because people ask me about this, and there's not much out there about it specifically to architecture and design. And so Proactive Practices is a needed resource, and I'm very happy that you've prepared it for us. So thank you for that, and thank you for sharing your knowledge here today at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, Mark. Thanks for having us on.
Complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode148. And don't forget to visit the website to gain access to your free digital course, Profit for Small Firm Architects, and learn how to build a powerful profit plan that will work for your small firm. Visit entrearchitect.com/free course. Hundreds of architects have taken this course, and it's a great place to get started building a better business. And it's free. entrearchitect.com/free course. My name is Mark Arlepage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.